Books.
A very warm welcome again to Czech Books, and today we are going to be looking at a quite amazing Prague-born writer called Edith Templeton. She was born in 1916 and she is still alive at the age of 90. She's had an extraordinary life, and also her works are very hard to categorize. They've acquired an almost legendary status, but she's not that well known here in the Czech Republic. To talk about Edith Templeton, I'm joined by Bernie Higgins, who has become, I think, really fascinated both by her work and her life. And she's been doing some research into Edith Templeton. Bernie, welcome to the studio.
Hello.
And just to get a few basic background details, tell me a little bit about Edith Templeton's early life here in the Czech Republic, or in Czechoslovakia, as it was.
She was born in 1916 in Prague, and she was born into a very, very upper-class family, and her grandmother owned a castle in Jirny, which is about 20 minutes from Prague. So she spent the summers of her youth in this castle, and a lot of her work is set in this period. In fact, of all of her work, she actually said in an interview, every word of it is true. There is not one word of invention in it. So you can infer a lot from reading her works about her early life.
And it's interesting. I mean, it sounds like really quite an idyllic and very privileged childhood, but she's most certainly not the kind of writer who's writing sentimental nostalgia about her childhood, is she?
I think there is a strangely nostalgic tone about a lot of her work, but she's certainly not sentimental. I think that what is most powerful about her writing is rather a steely, at times brittle, honesty and frankness and acute powers of description.
Well, let's actually hear a little extract from one of her stories, which comes in the collection of seven stories called The Darts of Cupid. So if you could read a short extract.
Yes, I'd like to read something from the beginning of one of the short stories called Equality Cake. In the kitchen of my grandmother's castle in Bohemia, there were two implements for the removal of cherry stones. They were wire loops mounted on stems of white unpolished wood, and every time the cook got ready to prepare the cherries for Equality Cake, she took them both out of a nest of drawers and laid them on the table. Then, with the superb calmness of the habitual evildoer, she pulled a hairpin from the coil of hair that crowned her head like an outsized snail shell carved of ebony, and used it for digging the stones out of the fruit. When this task was done, she wiped the pin across the front of her apron, restored it to its place, and returned the cherry stones where they belonged, as their deceitful presence was no longer needed. I never remarked on this ritual, but because I was a constant visitor in the kitchen, it was inevitable that, for me, Equality Cake stood for deceit. And this is a fascinating story because it plays with this name of the cake, Equality Cake, and then in the second half of the story, she returns to the castle as an adult during the communist period. And so all the notions of revolution and equality take on a very, very different meaning.
And there's another thing that we ought to say at this stage is that what you've just been reading, this fantastic prose, this is not a translation. Edith Templeton does write in English, doesn't she? So how is it that she came to write in English?
Well, she left the country, she married an Englishman, and in the 30s she in fact worked in London. She worked first in the office of the US Army Chief Surgeon, and then she became a captain of the British Army working as an interpreter. Later on, she in fact moved to India because her second husband was a doctor. In fact, he was a physician of the King of Nepal. So she lived in many different countries, and later on Portugal, and now she's living on the Italian Riviera. So she's a very, very cosmopolitan writer. And she started her writing in English in the 1950s, in fact. Her first novel was called Summer in the Country. And she started submitting short stories to The New Yorker in the 1950s and having them published there.
And so that must have really given her a very high profile in the United States and in the English-speaking world in general at the time.
Yeah. It's certainly very prestigious. Perhaps the most controversial of her stories was published was the actual story, The Darts of Cupid, when it was published in 1966. in The New Yorker, it was the most scandalous they'd ever published, and scandalous associated with Edith Templeton because she wrote, in fact, a book called Gordon, which was published pseudonymously in 1966 and was apparently banned in both England and Germany because of its obscenity. And it's very surprising that this very, very upper crust Czech aristocrat ended up being a writer of sadomasochistic work. This novel was reissued under her own name only in 2003. So since then, there's been more interest in her work. And in fact, it's been translated into Czech, Gordon.
And you've just been reading it. You say that it's a disturbing book, but also absolutely fascinating, and that you really couldn't put it down.
I'd like to read the opening of the novel, and you can understand the fabulous quality of the prose and how she does engage you in her story. At 5:45 in the afternoon on a sunny day in June, I was sitting near the bar counter at Shepherd's watching a man above the rim of my glass. I was certain he was going to try to pick me up. I was less certain what I was going to do about it. In looks, he reminded me of Major Carter, who a few weeks ago had embraced me while taking me home in a staff car from a regimental dance, and who, upon being repulsed, had apologised. I can't think what came over me, and you such a nice girl too. Perhaps it was his disappointment at my being such a nice girl which had driven him to get drunk later on that night, or perhaps he had been drunk already in the car. I had lost sight of him as soon as we had entered the vast lounge of the hotel, which was our mess. But half an hour later, while sitting and talking with several of my friends, I was astonished by Major Carter's appearance on the gallery which circled the lounge. He was naked except for underpants. Clutching the edge of the balustrade, he shouted, "I want a woman. I must have a woman." It's a fabulous opening, I think, to this book. And in fact, she is picked up in this very pub by Gordon, who is a psychoanalyst, and she begins a very terrible relationship with him, which eventually he, the sadist, cannot endure any longer and he commits suicide. But it is the quality of the prose, even at the moments that are most shocking. Now, I'll just read briefly a paragraph and give you some example. As their relationship progresses, he is driven to seek further means of humiliation of her, which she accepts quite willingly, and he takes her into a filthy courtyard in Soho to have sex with her. It was a most unsavoury place, as far as one could see by the spare light which penetrated from the lamps on the street beyond. Two or three windows in the upper floors showed their oblongs of dull gold, secretive and self-contained behind curtains. The aged, obscene body of the building was bursting open with sores and splitting with wounds, dustbins welling over with a pus of garbage, heaps of rubble and planks like smashed bones and broken teeth. Crates oozing tumbled junk were ranged against the walls where the plaster, patchy and peeling, like eczematous skin, revealed the crumbling brickwork. The ground was slippery and slimy, as though it had been excreting its own filth. It's
wow,
a very, very powerful, but ultimately I found the short story collection much more rewarding because there is something rather repetitious about repeating acts in an abusive relationship.
And you were saying when we were talking earlier about Edith Templeton's writing, especially about Gordon, there's a strange mixture of great frankness and passion, but lack of emotion.
Absolutely. There's a strange sense of absolute lack of emotion, and this almost seems to be what she's seeking, because the man, Gordon, who picks her up in the pub, within an hour he's having sex with her on a bench before they even know one another's names. And she describes this as being, "I was nothing at all. I had not been given the choice to be either." And I it's this sort of almost emotional black hole, which I sometimes feel in reading, particularly Gordon. And she seems to be giving you a very full, honest portrayal, but of the emotional lives of the people, she gives nothing, really.
Given that Edith Templeton has spent most of her life outside Czechoslovakia or the Czech Republic, she writes in English. Would you see her today as a Czech writer?
She's very hard to pigeonhole in many ways. She's very cosmopolitan. Many of her themes are set in the Czech Republic. I think that there's a sense of dislocation and existential honesty, which I feel, for me, has a very Czech resonance. And she writes English beautifully, but there is still something un-English about it. And I think that there's a sense of exile in her works, or loneliness. And maybe I could read the end of the story Equality Cake, which describes her departure from the castle after she's been shown around it by the caretaker. Halfway down the drive, I turned and looked back, but it was stupid of me. I should have known that from there one could not see the castle anymore. I walked back to the village, to the inn, where the innkeeper told me that the bus would arrive in an hour's time. I asked for coffee and sat down on a bench close to the windows. There was a table of young men and a table of old men. They were all drinking beer, and the wireless was playing a chorus singing Bohemian nursery songs that I knew by heart. The old men were discussing a tramway disaster in Prague, and they cursed the government for being too stingy to keep the tracks in good repair. The young men talked about motorcycles, and then they went outdoors and stood about looking at each other's motorcycles. Then the innkeeper brought me a tumbler full of water to put my lilies of the valley in, but he did not ask me where I got them, or who I was, or what I was doing there. For me, this expresses the isolation and the sense of exile, and maybe even homelessness, that I feel in Edith Templeton.
And she is still alive, isn't she?
Yes. And this reissue of Gordon and the publication of The Darts of Cupid have resurrected, if you like, an interest in her. And I think it's high time that her work was taken more seriously.
Well, I hope that this programme as well will have helped to have drawn Edith Templeton to a few more people.